Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. This evening we are on, or in, paper 40, section 5, which is old single column, page 445. So last session we got into this paper, if you flip back to the beginning, remember that technically this, this paper has a sevenfoldness to it. They give you seven different, as they call them, general classes of the ascending sons of God. They gave us brief thumbnail sketches of the last ones in that group, the evolutionary seraphim, ascending material sons, translated midwayers, and personalized adjusters that we went through last time. Now we're ready to do the three on the mortals. As you can see here by the title of section 5. And you know, we were saying last time they've been making you wait from the beginning of the book, all these papers. You finally get to the paper that's actually talking about us and how we fit into the cosmic picture. And they make you wait some more when you start the paper, and you finally get to this section, and they still make you wait some more. You know, there seems to be a definite suggestion, you know, between the lines of that construct, that one wants to recognize right up front how lowly a position we all begin in relationship to the cosmos. And you'll see they immediately remind us of that fact when we start reading. It doesn't mean our destiny isn't high, and you can take great delight in looking to that transcendent future, but it's important to begin with as much humility as possible, in spite of revelations of grand destinies to come, so that you don't get ahead of yourself, you know? So you don't start to bring in any misuse of the spiritual energies that you've been given to get you going with this long process. It's very easy for an immature creature to misuse spiritual gifts. And spiritual facts are, you know, genuinely dangerous. You can hurt yourself, really, you know, with spiritual energy. You can do damage to your soul with spiritual energy. No amount of material phenomena can do anything to your soul. You can stand at the epicenter of a hydrogen bomb and it doesn't do anything to your soul. Okay? But a little bit of spirit energy can put a very big, deep cut or scar in your soul if you misuse it. And so it's important to start with humility. So, as we begin this section, there's three paragraphs that sort of serve as a preface. And we want to appreciate the humility that's sort of between the lines in each of these three paragraphs. Let's read here.
Section 5, Mortals of Time and Space. Mortals represent the last link in the chain of those beings who are called sons of God. The personal touch of the original and eternal Son passes on down through a series of decreasingly divine and increasingly human personalizations until there arrives a being much like yourselves, one you can see, hear, and touch. And then you are made spiritually aware of the great truth which your faith may grasp, sonship with the eternal God.
Okay, so you see, they didn't hold back. They put an exclamation point on the end of it, even. They want us to take a hold of that great truth. Not a lot of fact in play yet, but there is definitely a great truth that you can take a hold of with your faith grasp, and it's worthy of even more than one exclamation point. It is a, you know, a magnificent gift of grace, this opportunity. Okay, so that, you know, that's a given. But how do they start the paragraph? You represent the last link. Okay? It doesn't get any lower than this. If you go one notch lower, it's fundamentally not personalizable, that creature. We're the lowest creature that can be personalized. The lowest creature that can possibly go to the top, where that personality came from eternity and infinity. So, you know, that, you know, if that wasn't, you know, enough, you know, we'll see that they bring in some other things here as well. Just in relationship to the Son, see first. I mean, three paragraphs, you can probably guess. There's one paragraph for each of the three infinite persons here. Right? So the first one is the eternal Son. So just that idea, we were talking about the ascending sons of God. So seeing ourselves as a downstepped expression of the eternal Son, but definitely downstepped way past the point where there's creator in play, and leaving creator-creature boundary way behind, you're going all the way down to the bottom of the creature spectrum.
As low as you can go.
Maybe. As low as you can go. Now, notice how they describe that. Decreasingly divine, okay, so that seems pretty straightforward. Obviously, you know, when you're up there in deity, when it's a downstepped expression of the eternal Son and it's still deity, personalized deity, the divinity is very immediate and definitive, but you drop down and you have creatures that aren't personalized deity. They're not God, but they're definitely innately divine. You go down a little farther, and there's creatures that didn't start out divine, but they've been around a long time, and they've achieved very definitive levels of divine relationship with the cosmos, and then all the way on down. But notice the curious other thing they throw in there. You know, they don't say when you get all the way down to the bottom, then you have humans. Notice how they worded that. They want you to think of a bidirectional spectrum. Okay. At the same time that decreasingly divine goes from the very top all the way to the bottom, the increasingly human is in parallel to that. You know, that reminds you again, I stress this all the time, they're wanting you to use the word human in a very literal sense, that up from the humus, literal meaning of that word human. As you get down, you have beings that are upward arrows, you know, up from the humus. You know, they may not literally start with their feet, you know, on the dirt, so literally like us. But of course, all creatures are domiciled on material abodes. So technically, everyone is starting with their feet planted on the ground. I mean, every seraphim, you know, every divine counselor, everyone starts. Okay, and as you get down, you actually, you know, at higher levels, their arrows may be pointing horizontally. You know, they're a stationary sun, and they're serving on a certain plane. But as you start to go down, the arrows actually turn upward. And we saw as we were reading some of these other beings before, they may start out horizontal, but they're at a low enough level where the arrow can be turned upward. They can be modified into an ascending phenomenon. See, so that's what they mean, you know, just to recognize that the word human is a synonym for ascending in many ways. It's an upward arrow word. And we may be the last link, but there's no more definitive upward arrow than at the very bottom, okay? You have the most upward potential of any being. And that's why very high beings crave the opportunity to get down and have experiences down at that level, where that potential is the greatest. It's impossible to be as definitively upward oriented a phenomenon if you can't get all the way down to the bottom? Right? See, so that's why they crave that. You know, we're reading about how the seraphim crave to get down there and serve way down at the bottom, because, you know, there's something that's increasing as you go down besides the thing that's decreasing. And again, remind ourselves that just because we're the last link doesn't mean that there isn't great value here. All right, see, so it's actually, you know, it's a pretty evenly balanced, you know, bit of humility along with, you know, if you're noticing, some reminder of why you should be hopeful, why you should be excited, even though you start down so low. All right, now let's see what they say about another one of the three infinite persons.
Likewise does the original and infinite spirit, by a long series of decreasingly divine and increasingly human orders, draw nearer and nearer to the struggling creatures of the realms, reaching the limit of expression in the angels, than whom you were created but a little lower, who personally guard and guide you in the life journey of the mortal career of time.
Okay, now that one seems pretty straightforward, and they basically never miss an opportunity to quote Hebrews and Psalms there. They, you know, they love to remind us of that comparison about a little lower or a little higher, depending on which way they're saying it. Now, notice they said the exact same thing. They decreasingly divine and increasingly human orders. See, to describe the angels as the most human in that whole hierarchy coming down from the third source and center. See, like I said, you need to think of the word human, you know, in a more philosophic, general way. So you get down to that last order of angels that's so low and so close to us that it's basically not revealed, disclosed a little bit, hinted at, but not openly revealed. They're going to be quite, quote-unquote, human. There's a lot of upward arrow potential in that that unrevealed lowest order of angels. Okay, now the other thing is the opportunity to just notice. So they describe all these ministers, you know, in general, and they say, who personally guard and guide you. Even though it takes us a little bit off to the side, it helps with emphasizing the humility element here. So I want to take a little diversion. You know, humans have been calling angels guardian angels forever. Okay. You know, and you see them, you know, referring to it there. And you ought to pause every time and see if you've managed to get your thinking modified from the old mode to the fifth epical revelation mode on what the word guard, what the word guard, you know, in the sense of guardian angels, what that word guard is meant to imply when you see it. Now, we all know when you get up there to paper 113 and you see the guardians of destiny, the seraphic guardians of destiny, you know, that's a little reminder that they're not guarding your life, per se, they're guarding your destiny. Okay, so, well, that's still kind of abstract. What does that mean? What does it mean to guard my destiny? I thought it might be worth just reading you a couple sentences up there in paper 113. If you want to turn to it, it's on old single column, page 1246. But it's in 113, section 5, the next to the last paragraph in section 5. They actually italicize the word guard in that paragraph because they're wanting you to think about the proper definition of it. And they say, in the life of the flesh, the intelligence of angels is not directly available to mortal men. Okay, so that's definitely tempering some delusion, possible delusion. They say, they are not overlords or directors. Okay, see, so they're not micromanaging and stuff like you may have thought of them doing. They are simply guardians. Well, okay, I'm still thinking that sounds, could be pretty direct. It says, then it says, the seraphim, and they italicize it, guard you. It's like, oh, I must be about to define it better here. Yeah, they say, they do not seek directly to influence you. You must chart your own course. But these angels then act to make the best possible use of the course you have chosen. Okay, see, so you choose a course. Now that's part of being a free will being. You know, they're going to be as hands-off as possible relative to that choice. You choosing whatever course, any course. Okay, so you choose it, and then they chime in and they guard, they're guardians of your opportunity to follow that choice. You have the right to follow your choice, whatever it is. No matter how ill chosen, they guard your right to choose that, you know, in the context of everyone trusts God. In particular here, everyone trusts the God of evolution, God the Supreme, that there is a inscrutable, holistic plan in play, and you just need to trust it and let it play out. Okay, so they're guarding, see, that choice, that course that you choose, so that no one can arbitrarily, really interfere with it. You know, it's part of that, you know, that hands-off relative to free will, you know, that's in general in play. You know, how definitive is that? You know, like I said, you know, no matter how ill chosen that course is. Now let's remind ourselves again of, you know, a passage that I often bring in, but to think of it more in this context. Paper 54, in the second Lucifer Rebellion paper, paper 54, section 5, which is old single column, page 617. They give it, you know, that's the wisdom of delay section. A bunch of you should know where I'm going here. There's that very eye-catching item number 10 in that section, where it says, the divine minister of Salvington issued her third independent proclamation, a mandate directing that nothing be done to half-cure, cowardly suppress, or otherwise hide the hideous visage of rebels and rebellion. The angelic hosts, and this is where I'm getting to, the angelic hosts were directed to work for full disclosure and unlimited opportunity for sin expression as the quickest technique of achieving the perfect and final cure of the plague of evil and sin. She's giving that mandate in the context that I just reminded you of from up there in paper 113. She's making sure that all the angels understand, okay, that that free will and that what they're guarding is independent of whether or not the adjective good or bad is in front of that choice. And even if it's bad in all caps and, you know, underlined. Okay. They are to very definitively guard your choice of a path to iniquity. To make sure that nothing interferes with that. You know, because there's going to be some things in play in the wake of a rebellion that are going to mitigate things. You know, you don't, it's not that it goes sort of untouched for some span and then all at once everything is all fixed. I mean, yeah, once there's an adjudication, you know, there's a very definitive intervention and a lot of things get fixed in short order. But for the last 200,000 years, there have been things that have been going on that, you know, theoretically can mitigate the harshness of us being, you know, within a rebellion domain. You know, so she's reminding her daughters, remember, you're guardians of that choice. If their course is towards iniquity, as a matter of fact, the more definitively it's toward iniquity, the more earnestly you should guard that. Make sure that nothing interferes with their right to choose that. Okay. See? So when you think...
With the angels, then.
What was that?
So how are you working with the angels if they're just making sure that, you know... They're just guarding your choice.
You're not working. See, that's, well, I remember what the first sentence was of that paragraph I read up in 113. I mean, you're not working with the angels in the sense of, you know, they're giving you intelligence and whatnot like this, see? Right? They're always there to, you know, to, they're working, they're not working with you, they're working with the environment that you're in. They're fostering the environment, and that's, you know, when we say environment, we immediately think, oh, you mean like the material objects, you know, they clear one out of the way. No, remember, they're ministering to you spiritually in general. I mean, most of the time, they're not doing anything with the material environment. Most of the time, they're affecting the spiritual environment, your immediate spiritual environment, you know, that your mind impinges upon at the top. That's, you know, we went through that as we were going through the Seraphim papers. They're ministering to that immediate spiritual environment that you touch. And you know, they're making sure that nothing in that spiritual environment is going to thwart your right to choose very definitively negative if that's what you want to do. See, so.
So you're saying if they weren't there, something in the spiritual environment could. Do
yeah,
that?
Might, you know, there's all kinds of positive spiritual ministries afoot. See, and they're guarding that you're not. Remember, you have to get to paradise on your own.
Why would they guard you against positive spiritual ministries?
Well, I was just about to explain that, okay. Right? I mean, it's not that they militate against positive spiritual ministries, okay? And that's obviously illogical, so that can't be what they're saying. But what they're doing is they're preserving that free will choice domain. There's no getting to paradise in some definitive way by someone else's exercise of will. Every step that you take towards paradise has to be absolutely your free will choice. That's what they're guarding, that you're not cheating your way to paradise if you want to think simplistically about it, you know, like that, okay? The whole point is that you are going to choose paradise. And they go through all this effort to you know, to make sure that everyone knows that there was no interference. You know, they have to give reports, you know, to definitively demonstrate that this person didn't fail because they let their guard down and let some negative influence enter in. And it works the other way too, that they didn't cheat for them. It's like, well, you know, I love Bob. You know, let's give Bob some help that other humans don't get. No, they have to literally stand before a board and prove that they didn't do that, that they gave you a free will domain. They guarded that jealously, that space, so that if there's positive ministry that engages you, it's because you supplied the favorable conditions for it to get to you. You chose to let that spiritual ministry in. They didn't shove it in. You willed it into relationship with yourself. You know, the place where this is very easy to understand and even see them talking directly about is in paper 34 about the spirit of truth. Okay? You know, where they remind you, I mean, basically nothing about the spirit of truth does anything to you unless you've willed it into relationship with yourself. There's basically nothing to it by grace. The Holy Spirit has a little bit by grace, without will. Spirit of truth, no. I mean, nothing effective as the spirit of truth at all. A tiny little bit by grace is the spirit of unification so that you can get an adjuster before you're a third circler. But the truth part, benefiting from its ministry of augmenting your relationship with truth, your recognition of truth? No, not one iota, unless you've chosen to supply the favorable conditions for that ministry to engage you. Yep.
The spirit of truth is not automatic. It doesn't come. You must will it. You must.
So it's automatically, you know,
available.
Available.
I understand. Okay, so in the morning you say, okay, I wish to be engaged with the spirit of truth. How long does that wish go? Through the day? And then I have to reaffirm it in the evening? I better pick up on that one.
Okay, that brings in a good point. So is it about wishing? Okay, no amount of adjutant mindal wishing, you know, has any real effect. You know, the favorable, you know, we have to apply some favorable conditions. You have to supply favorable conditions, you know, which means you have to have a mind energy system in the upper domain of the hourglass, okay, that's something that the spirit of ministry can interface with. See, so you're not choosing to benefit from the spirit of truth. You're choosing to consecrate your mind to universal harmony. You're choosing to develop a philosophic consciousness, you know, a cosmic-like consciousness, so that all those ministries in the cosmos have some synchrony with them, some ability to connect like to like. Right? So, you know, but the only way anything happens in the upper domain is by will. You know, and it can be unconscious. Okay, will can be unconsciously applied. Remember that because we're so clueless consciously, there's almost nothing that an adjuster can do with us while we're conscious. It needs that unconscious state and some willing that goes on in an unconscious state that supplies some favorable conditions for that adjuster to work. Right? See, you know, so it starts out very subtle. It's not something that you're just going to squint properly and boom, it snaps into place, and now you're a fire hose of cosmic input. Okay? It's just not the way it works. If anything, that sort of, you know, very self focused conscious effort is, you know, likely to be the opposite of what's favorable conditions, you know, because we just don't know exactly what we're doing. None of us knows the physics of that, you know, of this phenomenon. Okay, so it's all about just you know, working on being a person that's thinking of beyond the immediacy of their life. Any human that's trying to relate themselves to a bigger picture is in some way, at least unwittingly, unconsciously, supplying some favorable conditions for some of this help. When you start to get to be more of an adult of God and less a child of God, you can start to be involved in this more consciously without goofing it up. Okay, but so this humility thing. See, part of it is just recognizing I don't want to try to do this. You know, this works, because that's works righteousness. So you're, you know, and you don't have the physics knowledge to do that. So you want to try to just be humble and let go and try to just be someone who's trusting and trying to set their sights long-term in time and their field of view is broad in space, take in as big an expanse of the picture as you can into your thinking. Try to reflect about what's going on in your life. Don't just think about it. That's how it starts.
Chris.
Okay, yep.
I always thought that the seraphim were to provide for your spiritual ministry.
Right.
So,
right, that's what I was just saying.
If you're trying to be iniquitous, wouldn't they actually try to manipulate your environment to where you might run into somebody to make a difference in your life spiritually?
Iniquity is spiritual. That's the whole point we're trying to understand. Mm-hmm. You know, the words evil, sin, and iniquity have nothing to do with material things. Nothing at all. Zero.
Okay, well, aren't they trying
They're pure spirit words. Iniquity, I mean, to achieve iniquity is a transcendently spiritual achievement. It means that you've managed to let go of all of the boat anchor of your, as you begin as a material being, and you have consecrated yourself definitively to spirit energy, you know, in a wrong direction, but you've made yourself purely spiritual in order to get to that iniquity point. Because your material, which you don't have a lot of control over, is by and large, when mind and spirit seed on it, it's in a positive direction. See, so you've had to overrule all of the positive spirit that tends the seat on your body as it was given to you. You've had to liberate yourself from all of the grace of your body and its proper relationship to mind and spirit. You've gone up above all of that and decided to be in relationship to spirit in 100% negative direction. See, that's the point I'm trying to get. I mean, if it wasn't a purely spiritual thing, then this sentence about the Creative Mother Spirit's order would be illogical, nonsensical. Now, how could she order her spiritual ministers, her angels, to work for unlimited opportunity for sin expression if sin wasn't a purely spiritual fact? Matter of fact, remember that what they're doing is so spiritual that they can't even describe it to us. We are completely unable to comprehend anything that they're doing. It's so transcendent of matter, which we know, it's so spiritual that it's incomprehensible to us. None of us know what the word spirit means yet. We can't yet. It's, you know, so that's why I say when you start thinking about someone, well, I'm pretty sure that person's iniquitous, you know, because they, you know, they don't believe the way I do or something. It's like, no, I mean, that's such a primitive thought. That's where you think sin has something to do with the violation of, you know, of taboos, all of which are material related. No. I mean, if a person achieves iniquity, they've made themselves more spiritual than you've imagined being yet. It's just in the opposite direction. And remember,
totally reforming.
Right, and the fifth epical revelation didn't start this. Jesus tried to start this education 2,000 years ago. He spent several years directly talking and interacting, living with 12 people. Idiots. And tried to get them to distinguish between material and spiritual, and couldn't do it, okay? You know, they're literally living with the Creator Son incarnate, sleeping with Him, eating with Him, okay? And they can't figure this out. I mean, that's how clueless we are about what spirit is, okay? That not even a Creator's Son can inform us of this. It's so removed from anything we can even imagine right now. So that's why we all need to be we need to take on this challenge that Jesus started 2,000 years ago and the Revelation is trying to bring up. Yeah, like Don was just saying, none of us have ever understood at all what angels are up to or what God is up to. We've materialized all of these actions. You know, we're struggling to not think of God as a volcano God. We're struggling to not think of angels as something that are buxom, and that's why they're comforting. Because you know, when you laid your head on mommy's chest, you know, it was very comforting, and you fell asleep. I mean, that's all we can imagine. It's like, well, that must be what an angel is if they're going to be comforting. They must be buxom winged things. Otherwise, how could they comfort me? That's the only thing that's ever comforted me. I mean, that's a pretty simplistic, materialistic mindset, you know, that the Revelation is trying to challenge. Okay? And it's a double-edged sword. I mean, as you know, you think, okay, well, that'd be really great if I could stop thinking of things so materialistically and actually start to think of things more genuinely spiritually. But it's a double-edged sword because once you start to, you know, recognize what spirit is about, and you know that sin and iniquity are spirit words, not material words, and all those people that are doing horrendous material things, no, that doesn't have anything to do with sin and iniquity. you know, and that the reason that Lucifer could become iniquitous in such definitive fashion is because he's a spirit being. Okay? it's harder for us to become iniquitous because we're material beings. Now, the spirit stuff is right there in front of him, and he has his hands on it, so he can twist it around easily. We have to try to get somehow way up above anything we've ever imagined that you could take a hold of in order to even get a hold of spirit to, you know, and to turn it around. But isn't it wonderful that by grace, we don't have to get up there very much, because by grace, it's been oriented positively. You know, so you don't have to go, well, let me just check, make sure God put it in the right direction. Trust that it's in the right direction, and just let that flow that's way up above your head slowly kind of get your mind moving in that direction, and then that'll work its way down through the levels of mind, you know, by friction. You know, one level kind of gets by friction, the level below it moving in the same direction, and the level below it, and finally gets all the way down to the matter, and the matter actually kind of starts to drift in that direction. And that's the way you start, very humbly, as drifting towards God. But if you start out with pride, thinking, I'm not going to drift, I'm going to run, okay? Right? Not wise.
Such a different concept to even try to think about.
Yeah, it is.
That you have to become like the guru, the spiritual guru, in order to deny it, right? That's what you're saying. You have to become really spiritual, and then say, no, I don't want that.
And the whole point is, what the revelation is really trying to get is stop worrying about all that crap.
The hell is a guru?
You know, stop worrying about trying to be positive or negative, spiritual, guru, or whatever. I mean, just trust. See, we've all been thinking for years that we have to try to somehow educate ourselves, find some guru or something to educate us or whatever, into some technique to be properly spiritual. And it's like, no, you don't. You don't have to do any such thing. You're made human by grace. You're an upward arrow by grace. Matter of fact, you're the most definitive upward arrow by grace in the entire universe. If there's anyone that can trust that if they just let it be and it'll go up, it's us. An angel can't trust their upward arrow as much as we can. They're not as definitively upward as we are by grace alone. We just read that. We're the most increasingly, you know, we're the maximization of increasingly upward arrow. See, so the revelation is trying to get us to let go of this stuff. You know, it's nothing new. Think about all the times that Jesus is interacting with the apostles. It's the same thing. The apostles are trying to figure out the technique, and Jesus, stop it. Stop trying to turn my parables into some sort of, you know, allegory, and just let go of all that stuff. Just walk humbly with your God. The Old Testament tells you that, for Pete's sake. You know, he'd say to them, walk humbly. That's all you have to do, is just walk humbly with your God. And everything will be taken care of. And when you're ready to start doing things on your own, you know, you will. But that's a long way ahead of you. You got several mansion worlds to go before you can kind of really take a hold of this yourself and know what you're doing. All right. Yep.
The goal would be to be balancing your material and your emotional, and then get those two balanced, because they're kind of at 90 degrees, but then use your soul intelligence to really orient and have a guiding path that overshadows, it's more controlling of both of the others, you know, that really influences everything.
Right, okay, you see, there's a great example. Okay, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in those thoughts. But notice again, everyone is trying to figure out the technique and try to put terminology to everything. And it's like, you know, I've got to get my terminology proper. I mean, grace. There's a wonderful thing called grace that none of us have to figure out, you know, how physics works with spirit energy. We can just trust, be humble little children of God to start with, and just trust, you know. A really little child doesn't knit their brow trying to understand the rationale of what mom and dad tell them to do something. They just do it. Okay? That's what Jesus meant. You must become as a little child. Okay? He approached the fifth epical revelation, same way. Okay? Just trust it. Obey it. Zoom in precisely on it and just obey it initially. Don't try to figure it out all initially because it's very complicated. Just begin by trusting and obeying. Like that little child just obeys its parents. It doesn't question, you know, or think about it. Oh, I can understand why mom and dad are thinking that. So yeah, okay, I'll do that. You know, there's none of that. They just obey. That's the way we need to start out. So just, you know, we've done two of the three persons. The son, the son. You got a question on the, question on the webinar? Okay.
Yes. Looks like it's like three part.
Well, pick one good part. We'll do one part.
Oh, well, I wonder which part he wants me to do.
A complicated one I could maybe do afterwards here.
I'll just start at the beginning.
Yeah, just give me the first part.
If creative spirit is mandated, why is the son Michael mandated as a mercy giver? Do I need to keep going? If we are material beings, why is spirit things, they approachable if we cannot be iniquitous or righteous by our choice? Why choose?
Oh, okay, let me just address that generally, okay? You're not a spirit being, you're a material being, as I was saying, okay? The whole bit about choosing, do one simple little choice to begin with that's appropriate to initiating a little child of God. I choose to trust you, God, implicitly. Okay, now you're in play. And then try to be very, very sparing in invoking your choosing thing after that initial one. Try to just make decisions in the wake of that simple little choice. That simple little faith grasps way up from the material that you are, up to that spirit, you gently take a hold of it, and you choose to just, I choose to be to humbly be a child of God. There's my choice. Okay? It's not a function of time or space. It applies anywhere and anytime. It's a choice. It's not a decision. Okay? And then I just make decisions in the wake of that choice. It's like, okay, because I've chosen to humbly trust God to be his child, how should I respond to this person that just irritated me? I need to make a decision in this moment, in this place. It's not a choice, it's just a decision, because it's time and space specific. Okay? You know, and you decide, you know, I should probably not be so certain about myself that I think I can definitively, you know, rebut what they're saying, you know, or challenge what they're saying. Maybe I should be humble, because I remember I chose to recognize I'm a humble child of God. So I shouldn't, you know, if I'm thinking more objectively, I shouldn't go on that path that only goes to one place, self-righteousness, you know, where you're very prideful in all your responses. Well, let me tell you, you know, how that works. Okay? Now, let me educate you. Let me explain it to you. Just, you know, just let things be more. Be more humble. Okay? That's all there is to it. You don't need some fancy guru. I mean, because really the only choice you need to make is that. I mean, they're about to tell us that very thing. That's really the only, I mean, there's, it's inappropriate to be making bigger choices right now and with this much ignorance. Okay? So,
the follow-up is appropriate.
Okay.
So, given that, where does philosophy fit in with that?
Okay, philosophy fits in when you're starting to make the transition from being a child to being an adult. Remember, the fourth epical revelation is for the children, and the fifth can help remind you of specifically what the simple little facts of the fourth are for those children. The fifth is for you know, those who are attempting to move forward and try to become an adult. A child can't have a personal living philosophy other than that little thread that was given them by grace and they're completely ignorant of, okay? Only an adult can choose to, you know, to start to develop a personal living philosophy. So you have to have firmly done those first steps as a child. And God has grown you forward from those humble little steps to the point now where you can start to get into the game a little bit more consciously and actively. And you're going to start to think about all these things that go way beyond those initial worries that children have, like, am I going to survive death? Does God listen to me when I talk to him? Yeah, which is about all the child is, you know, interested in. Okay, those never enter your mind anymore as an adult. I mean, you know, is Jesus, you know, demonstrating what an adult of God looks like? You know, manifesting someone who's, you know, wondering if God is, you know, paying any attention or if, you know, he's going to survive death? No. I mean, is that what he looked like when he was a third circler going around the Mediterranean with Ganon and Ganon? No, not even remotely, right? And that stuff was already way in the rearview mirror there. Right? All right, so, you know, that's, you know, well, I mean, we can't help if we're studying the fifth epical revelations. See, we're really studying what you do after you're definitively a child of God and you're starting to become an adolescent of God. The fifth epical revelation is to help an adolescent of God become an adult of God. You know, it sort of is just a given that you've already consecrated yourself definitively to being a child of God before you start reading it. Right? So,
right. Well, he went about doing good. I mean, it's like,
yeah, he just went about doing good. You know, a child of God can do that. You know, but an adult of God is going to start thinking about more complicated things, like, well, see, how could, I'm really interested in economics. How could I bring a more cosmic consciousness into the science of economics? What would a monetary system look like that's predicated, you know, more on a three-level local universe and, you know, okay, all these, okay. You know, and
people are going to think about that anyway, but I mean,
Right. See, just appreciate, see, the thing about when you become an adult, all the questions about yourself, see, aren't in play anymore. A child is still trying to figure out itself. But an adult, you know, knows that God's got your back, and you turn around and forget about the self, and you start, you know, engaging others in the external world. Okay, let's keep moving here. See if we can get three paragraphs done tonight. All right. Okay, so I was just going to try to transition before we read the next paragraph. Okay, remember what we're doing here besides all these tangents. They're giving us three paragraphs about our relationship to the three person, infinite persons. And the first two, they point out, literally downstep themselves all the way down to eye level with us. The first one, that's really why we're here, because we're a downstepped expression of the eternal Son. And then those ministers that are at eye level with us, we're downstepped from the infinite Spirit. Okay? And we were reminded that those ministers don't just guide us, but guard us. And that when we were trying to appreciate the humility that needs to be there when you're thinking about that guard thing, because you don't want to be choosing something negative that they will then guard from being thwarted off its negativity. See, so again, that's why I went on that long journey. There's a humility that's being stressed here. Last link, guard, think about the guard. Okay, now what do they, when they bring in the Father, where does the humility come in?
God the Father does not, cannot thus downstep himself to make such near personal contact with the almost limitless number of ascending creatures throughout the universe of universes. But the Father is not deprived of personal contact with his lowly creatures. You are not without the divine presence. Although God the Father cannot be with you by direct personality manifestation, he is in you and of you in the identity of the indwelling thought adjusters, the divine monitors. Thus does the Father, who is the farthest from you in personality and in spirit, draw the nearest to you in the personality circuit and in the spirit touch of inner communication with the very...
Not communication, that's going too far. Spirit touch of inner...
Of spirit touch of inner communication.
Communion.
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 Not in my book.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Look at his book.
What does it say?
Inner communion.
Yeah, it's communion.
Whoa, somebody made a change.
Spirit touch of inner communion with the very souls of his mortal sons and daughters.
What book do you have, just out of curiosity?
Oh, one of the newer ones. Well, I'll look into that. Let's just let's set that. I'll check into that. But see, it's inner communion. All right. So,
of course, it's communion. We don't talk to us.
I mean, the very fact that I told you this was going to be about humility, that would indicate an absence of humility if you put communication in there. See? Okay, so step one here in this paragraph is, a little bit to the side again, but, notice what they are using this opportunity to remind you of our delusions about God the Father. Okay? God the Father does not, and then they say, cannot. Okay? Humans have never, thought it was appropriate to say cannot about God. Okay? No, if God wants to make a square circle, he can make a square circle. God can do anything. No, he cannot. Okay? And the most challenging thing for the lowly, little, grasping, fearful mortal about this reality check on God the Father is that he cannot thus downstep himself to make such near personal contact. The Father cannot be with you by direct personality manifestation. God the Father is not personality directly personally present out here at all, 0%. If he was here at 0.00001%, there wouldn't be an out here. He would absorb it all into himself as God the Infinite, and there would be no other. Okay? He can't be personally present out here at all. Okay? And so all of our desires to put him right in front of us, in a burning bush in front of us or whatever, they're pulling that away from you. That's pretty harsh. Okay, but they're trying to get you to appreciate that you don't need him personally present. You're not remotely demanding personally yet enough to need him be personally present. You won't be that personally demanding until you're standing on the Isle of Paradise. And then guess what? He'll be there for you. Right now, you need to humbly recognize that there's not a lot of personality in play. And it's very appropriate that what he sends you as a literal fact is not a personal gift. It's an impersonal gift. That thought adjuster fragment, you can think of it as an identity. Notice how they said there. He is in you and of you in the identity of the indwelling thought adjuster. You are allowed to give it some reality instead of just actuality. But if you do, you should really think of it as not spirit pattern, personality that's identifying. You should think of it as energy pattern that's identifying, making it an identity. Because remember, the thought adjuster is technically as much pure energy as it is pure spirit. It's a reality. And the fact that it has that more material, energy-like nature, that's why it can draw so near to you as a very lowly, last link in the chain, material creature. Okay, so it can be very intimate with you. But even that, they temper a little bit at the end there. So thus does the Father, who is the farthest from you in personality and in spirit, draw the nearest to you in personality circuit. It's like, okay, yeah, he gave me my personality, and I'm in that volitional circuit, his personality circuit. And in the spirit touch of inner communion with the very souls of his mortal sons and daughters. Okay? If you want to think of it, if you want to call that thought adjuster a spirit fragment, and you want to think precisely about that, you need to think humbly about that. Because even the highest reaches of your mind are still just mind energy, not spirit energy. That as a spirit fragment, not as an influence downstepped from that in your mind, but as a spirit fragment, it's above your mind. It's not at eye level with even the highest levels of your mind. It's at eye level with that other self, your soul, that self you aren't conscious of. See, that spirit touch, where it literally spirit energy touches spirit energy, you know, and it's on the same plane, that spirit energy in that soul and the spirit energy in that adjuster touch each other above your mind. Your soul is above your mind. The adjuster is a spirit fragment, is above your mind, okay? See, it's in communion with the very souls, okay, of the mortal sons and daughters. So the humility in that, again, remember, where the rubber's really meeting the road, where the Father is very intimate in that spirit way, is above the self that's thinking about that right now. It's above your adjutant mindal self. It's above the self that you know yearns for eternity. The self that's thinking right now and yearning is mortal and doesn't get resurrected. It dies. What gets resurrected is that other self that's up there at eye level with that spirit fragment. Okay, and you have to trust that God knows what he's doing, that God has taken the parts of you that will be really important to you in the next life and has copied them into that soul. Because that's what's going to get resurrected. You can't check, make sure he's done a good job, copy the things that you'd like to have resurrected. You have to trust that he knows what he's doing. Through his adjuster, the actual copying mechanism. Okay, so in all three of these, see, there's humility there. If you're thinking clearly about what they're saying,
but it's comforting.
But it should be comforting at the same time that you are appropriately humble. You should be more comforted than you were before.
I'd much rather trust him.
Yes.
Than trust myself.
Right. Shouldn't we? What, you know, isn't that, yeah. Right. If you can actually let go of your grasping self, you'll get the comfort that you've long sought. Instead of trying to make up some anthropomorphic comfort to comfort that grasping self, and that comfort's not real because that self is, in the big picture, is not real either. Okay? Try to, let that which is real be comforted. When Jesus said, no real harm can befall me, see, that's what he was talking about. He knew that he could stand at the right at the epicenter of a hydrogen bomb and his soul would be unaffected by that blast. No real harm can befall him. And he trusts the Father implicitly that everything that he could ever want from his life here on this world got copied, and And, you know, once he's in his public ministry, you know, think about that. As Michael, and is fully conscious, you know, he can actually take a look at that soul that that adjuster made and go, yeah, that's cool. My trust was not, you know, in vain. God copied every single thing that I could ever want in eternity from this life.
He could look at it?
Right, you know, he then could assess it as Michael. You know?
No, John, you can't.
Now, you know, if you actually, in this life, if you get up to a third circler and are moving towards fusion, you know, so that the seat of your consciousness is starting to transfer your soul, I mean, you know, yeah, those individuals are going to start to have some aware, you know. It's like, hey, this is still me. Everything that I really want is here. When do we leave? Right? You know, but a lot of us, you see, you know, we're not ready to let go like that. It's like, well, I don't know. Am I really ready to leave? I can't. I'd like to check first that you've done a good job copying. Just give me a quick little peek. And if it looks like you've done a good job, okay, then I'll let go. And, you know, and we can move on.
But even if you are ready to leave, you know, and you're sitting here like we are this evening, or, you know, and we're in this isolated world out in the middle of nowhere, being born from the beginning, and we've got the revelation, and we've got all the stuff, all those things that we can possibly do. I mean, yeah, it's maybe greater on the other side, but, you know, to me, I'm never going to get an opportunity like this again.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's like, especially starting out at the bottom.
Right, right.
You know,
like,
having to make those choices, not knowing what it is, you know, it's like, that's the exciting part to me.
Yeah.
That's the drag.
You
fall down. You got to pick yourself up, and you fall down, and you pick yourself up. You constantly fall down and pick yourself up.
Right, yeah. So like I was saying at the beginning, you know, that recognition that you're actually at the end point of an increasingly, you know, and there's great things here. You know, when I say I'm ready to leave, you know, I just meant kind of in that sense, you know, your body is just literally falling apart.
Yeah.
You got about 10 minutes left, you know, and the ticker's going to quit here. And just, it's like when you get to that point, are you still going to be grasping? It's like, I'm not sure. Did you really do a good job copying? I mean, how unfortunate to be in that state of mind when you're actually there in that transmit. Approach your death, however it comes, with the appropriate peace, knowing that, don't approach it with mere faith. Approach your death with trust, living faith, where there's not even the slightest doubt in your mind that you're going to wake up, you know, that you're not going to wake up with everything that you like to wake up with. Be absolutely certain, you know, that no real harm is going to befall you as you die and are resurrected. I trust. Okay, so there's the intro. Let's start to get into some of the details here. And it's not going to get any more interesting, any less interesting and tangential when we get into the details. There's all kinds of fun stuff to think about here. So let's just patiently wade into it here.
Spirit identification constitutes the secret of personal survival and determines the destiny of spiritual ascension. And since the thought adjusters are the only spirits of fusion potential to be identified with man during the life in the flesh, the mortals of time and space are primarily classified in accordance with the relation to these divine gifts, the indwelling mystery monitors. This classification is as follows. 1. Mortals of the transient or experiential adjuster sojourn. 2. Mortals of the non-adjuster fusion types. 3. Mortals of adjuster fusion potential.
Okay, so before we go into series 1, so that spirit identification, you know, like we were saying, it's only your soul that can literally, at eye level, you know, identify. You know, that's the secret, you know, personal survival. It's not somehow getting my lowly adjutant and animal origin self magically to survive death. Okay, the secret is that there's nothing magical that's in play. Okay, and That's the secret of personal survival and determines the destiny of spiritual ascension. Your soul is what's going to ascend. Now notice the little thing that's just kind of thrown in there in relation to what we were just reading. And since the thought adjusters are the only spirits of fusion potential to be identified with man during the life in the flesh. Okay, they just told us that the Son and the Spirit can kind of get down to eye level a lot more definitively in a number of ways than the Father. But the flip side is, neither of those persons have any way to get a spirit fragment down all the way to the material creature level. If they're going to be involved in a spirit fragment, it's got to enter in at a higher level. Only the Father can get all the way down to the bottom. Why? Why can't the Son or the Spirit get all the way? And why couldn't some fragment of the downstepped in some way from the infinite spirit fuse with a material animal origin creature? It's because third source and center is the absolute mind. Second source and center is the absolute spirit. Neither of those words were the word matter. One was mind and one was spirit. Okay? There's only one of the three persons that has a direct connection to matter, and hence down to our level. Now, as the universal controller, he's directly related to the Isle of Paradise, and hence to matter. See, so that's why only his fragments, can actually fuse with someone down here. Otherwise, if they're going to fuse with a spirit fuser, they've got to go up a notch to fuse with that. Okay, is there a question?
Yes. Roger asks, are there any mortals not of time and space?
No. All mortals are of time. They're just, when they say that, the mortals of time and space, they're just reminding you of, to be mortal is to be of time. See, so. To be immortal is to be of eternity. All right, so you've got, because of this, like they said, so you're going to differentiate the different types of mortals by their relationship to the Father fragment. Even if they're not going to end up fusing with a Father fragment, you're going to talk about them in their relationship to the Father fragment. All right, let's see, is there anything else we need to say up front? I think let's get into series one here.
Series one, mortals of the transient or experiential adjuster sojourn. This series designation is temporary for any evolving planet, being used during the early stages of all inhabited worlds, except those of the second series.
Let me just say something up front there before I get into those other things in the next paragraph. So that you understand the basics here. The main thing that you should bring to mind when you're talking about series one is worlds where the humans are technically called primitive men. Okay, the technical definition of primitive men is any humans that are there before the planetary prince arrives. Okay. You may not have Andonites at all, right? Most worlds just have Sangiks. Okay. I was going to get to our world in just a second. Okay. But primitive men are pre-planetary prince men. That's a reminder that it's not an arbitrary time when the planetary prince comes. There's an actual dividing line where you basically don't have these very limited humans after the planetary prince. Now, in our case, it's different because of what Don was just saying there. Remember, we had a pre-Sangic race. the Andonites, you know, the descendants of Andon and Phanta, directly, before this, the six Sangiks. So for 500,000 years, you know, we had primitive men, okay, only. And remember how this works when we finally did get Sangiks. You know, we just, there was just a handful of those first Sangiks that were born into that one family. What was it, 19, I think it was, or if I'm remembering off the top of my head, I think it was just a handful like that. And, you know, and all of the Sangic races, you know, that were generated were by those initial progenitor Sangics mating with the Andonites. And when they mated with the Andonites, you know, got their skin color and you know, physical characteristics. Okay, so during that whole post-planetary prince, pre-Adamic age for us, you're going to have a lot of primitive men still. In that definition. Okay, so the whole pre-Adamic period in our world, unlike on a normal world, is going to have this in play, this transient or experiential adjuster status is going to be in play for us, which is very exceptional. Okay, let's read a little about it.
Mortals of Series 1 inhabit the worlds of space during the earlier epochs of the evolution of mankind and embrace the most primitive types of human minds. On many worlds, like pre-Adamic Urantia, great numbers of the higher and more advanced types of primitive men acquire survival capacity but fail to attain adjuster fusion. For ages upon ages, before man's ascent to the level of higher spiritual volition, the adjusters occupy the minds of these struggling creatures during their short lives in the flesh. In the moment such will creatures are indwelt by adjusters, the group guardian angels begin to function. While these mortals of the first series do not have personal guardians, they do have group custodians.
Okay, adjusters first, then we'll do the guardian angels. Okay, see, they sure enough, see, they said pre-Adamic, see, and not pre-planetary prince, because we've got that in play here. Like I said, but you know, as I mentioned, primitive men, that's the technical term. Okay, and when they say higher and more advanced types, okay, acquire spiritual capacity but fail to attain adjuster fusion, they don't mean they didn't fuse during the mortal life. Okay, what they mean is, they're not able to fuse with adjuster. You, in the early stages of evolution, you literally can't fuse with an adjuster, even if you're a type of evolving mortal that is going to fuse with an adjuster.
Ever?
They cannot fuse with an adjuster. So.
But even you know, in the mansion worlds?
Yes, even on the mansion worlds. Yes. All right, so. It's very important to appreciate that, the transitional aspect of becoming father fusers, that you literally have in these early stages on every world where it didn't, you know they're not going to live very long because it's a very rugged life, but it wouldn't matter if they lived for 1,000 years. They cannot fuse with an adjuster. They could be a first circler for, 1,000 years, and they still wouldn't fuse with their adjuster. They can't, they're literally not able to fuse with adjusters. And the answer to why is not even the revelators understand these things. But it's a physics question, see, that is beyond even the revelators' understanding. I mean,
aren't some of these guys on the core in 24?
We'll get it.
But, they're not lost.
Right. No. We'll get to this. And there's a number of issues here. Okay. Okay. All these questions are going to pop up. Okay. Andon and Phanta got thought adjusters. Okay. And so did others. Okay. It's not every one of these. Okay. Again, I'm just trying to point out that. You have some physics in play that we can't understand, where these early mortals are like series two, like the series two ones. Again, when we get to series two, you know, you could have a planet that's settled in the seventh stage of light and life. Everyone, you know, is a first circler on the world, and none of them are fusing because they can't fuse with thought adjusters. Okay, they all have thought adjusters, but none of them can fuse with them. Okay, these primitive men are that way.
Ever?
Ever. They can't fuse with thought adjusters.
Why is that?
Again, I can't. The revelators can't answer that question. They're designed that way.
Well, they said, you know, for the non-breathers or that type of way.
Yeah, man, we'll get to that, man. We'll get to that. Okay, they're not father fusers. Okay, so if you want to know why, it's because they weren't made to fuse with father fragments. So again, this is a little bit reminder. It's like, well, the only value in the universe is father fuser. Yeah, okay, that's just so self-centered and delusional. Okay. You know, when we go, why? Why would God keep them from? Why would he? Why does he hate them? I see. I mean, that's what we're thinking. It's like, I mean, this is what we're trying to get up front here. This is ridiculous thinking. Okay, we have to appreciate this. Most of the mortals. Pre-Adam and Eve. Now, and remember, you know, Adam and Eve's blood didn't get spread very deeply, okay? So even all the way up to Michael, okay, you're going to have mortals who are technically primitive men who can't fuse with thought adjusters. Okay. So that's an amazing thing about, you know, you get universal with soul thought adjusters. So what Michael did there is he actually made it so primitive men could fuse with father fragments. There's not going to be a lot of those in the universe.
Like us.
To actually have an ascender who's technically, you know, their life is as a primitive man, but they, you know, didn't wake up as a spirit fuser. They, you know, they woke up and eventually, you know, got fused with their thought adjuster.
The real bottom.
Okay, that's really, I mean, that see, those would be the individuals that are actually realizing the very lowest depths available, right? Someone that technically shouldn't be able to fuse, you know, is getting this little help and can. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. Yep.
But they will survive.
Right, we're getting there. Okay. All right, so why do they survive? Okay, anyone who gets a father fragment for any length of time, 10 seconds, you know, 1 second, whatever, there's an embryonic soul there. Right? And in the instant you get a thought adjuster, there's an embryonic soul. So now someone can survive. If there's no soul, there's no survival. Well, there's an exception. We'll get to that in a second. But but technically, if you're an independent ascender, if you don't have a soul, you don't survive. Okay, all of these that can't fuse with the father fragment, they have a soul if they got an adjuster. Now, if they didn't get an adjuster, okay, then they're not going to survive. But if they got an adjuster, then that soul will be resurrected. But what happens? If they build a Marantia body, they put that soul into it, okay? But the thought adjuster doesn't come back. The creative mother spirit puts a fragment of her spirit nature into that Marantia body, and right at the moment of resurrection, it fuses. You know, that spirit fragment fuses, you know, and resurrects that spirit fuser. And so all these primitive men, you know, fuse at resurrection on the first mansion world. With that spirit fragment. You can fuse with that because, you know, that spirit fragment is down at eye level. The creative mother spirit is giving you a fragment that you don't have to climb up to. You can fuse with it right away. Okay. Right, so they survived. Now, the other big thing that they're throwing in there is about the angelic ministry. Notice the difference here. For us, you know, even before we you get a thought adjuster, there's angelic ministry in play. Okay, but not here. When you're dealing with primitive men, they aren't put under group guardianship at all until they get an adjuster. Do you notice that little tidbit there? See, that reminds you, I mean, you, the only thing that makes them something that needs to have that spiritual ministry associated with it is the adjuster, because just their basic nature is too lowly. So, see, they can't fuse with the father fragment because of their the lowness of their nature, obviously, is part of the reason why they can't.
Right? Would they have the sixth and seventh adjutant in play at all?
Well, of course. They're humans. Right, I mean, they have all seven adjutants. They're encircled in the Holy Spirit. They have a personality identified with them. They're humans. Okay, but they just, and you notice how they say, they do, while these mortals of the first series do not have personal guardians, they do have group guardians. So that's also, they're never getting to third circler, primitive men. Okay, they're always in a lower circle. You know, see how they do not have personal guardians. See, so it's just a given. I mean, it doesn't matter how long one of those primitive men live, they can't get that far. They're incapable of reaching third circler during the mortal life. They have to do that in the mansion worlds. So that's another little reminder of how lowly they are. Okay, now the one little side I want to take here is children. Let's remind ourselves in this context, when you see this statement about, you know, not having group guardians until they have an adjuster, it's like, well, what about the children? I mean, you know, a primitive human may not be getting an adjuster until, you know, they're quite old. You know, how does this work with kids? Well, I mean, you know, again, if no
who
one
die,
has,
who die early?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm starting with kids in general. Okay, so, and then they have the issue of death. Yes. Okay, I mean, if there's no adjuster and anyone involved, okay, there's no way for anyone to survive. I mean, the only way that a child younger than roughly 16 can survive without an adjuster is if the parent survives, which means they had an adjuster. Now, you know, if you're thinking about one of these primitive men, they finally get an adjuster. If they have kids, okay, that are younger than 16, and why am I saying 16? Remember, that's children younger than roughly age 16 are still literally mindily connected to their parents. They haven't separated mindily, so they're still sharing the same mind space.
Is that 16 in any part of history?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in fact, it's independent of how long your years are and stuff. And so, I mean, then they tell you, if you go to the first mansion world, you won't find anyone from any world younger than 16, and they mean 16 in that child's years. This is all synchronized.
In the old days, they might not live much faster.
Right, I know. Yeah, I see it. Right. Yeah. Right. So, but the way it works, see, I mean, if a parent has an adjuster, when the child gets to roughly age 6, they can get an adjuster. Because, see, that mind space has been adjusterized. It's prepared the space so that child, so it's like having the Spirit of Truth, see, in miniature. Any children younger than 16, if a parent has an adjuster, can get an adjuster. That's why the kids in the probationary nursery at roughly age 6 get an adjuster, because their parent on the first mansion world has an adjuster. Okay, but they're still connected to their parents until 16. So when you think about this, not the parent or any child younger than 16 that's still connected to the parent mindily, there's no guardian angel ministry to any of them. No guardian angels watching over those little children and these primitive men. But if the parent gets an adjuster, the children are going to get adjusters if they're older than 6. And then there's going to be angelic ministry. And the way the angelic ministry works, when kids are younger than 16, is the parent that's more advanced, the children benefit from that level of angelic ministry. See, so the children are just ministered to factually. They're still literally connected to the mind, parents mindily. And so, you know, they're just benefiting from the same ministry to that mind and their parents. Once that child is older than 16, okay, now they're going to be ministered separately. So like for us, you know, let's set primitive men aside. Let's just think about us. Our children, you know, are being ministered just within our group. If I'm a seventh circler and I'm in a group of 1,000, that's not counting my 50 kids, you know, that are younger than 16. Okay, those are all treated as just me, okay, in that group of 1,000. You know, but if once those kids get past 16, then they'll be, you know, put in a group of their own, a group of 1,000, you know, seventh circlers. Or, you know, if that kid is really precocious and becomes a third circler, while I'm still a, you know, a fifth circler, you know, they get their own personal guardians and stuff, you know, and leave me behind. But obviously, you know, they tell you in general, you know, the kids are going to be less advanced. Okay. You know, and so they just benefit from whether angelic ministry is the most advanced parent is getting. You know, but in when you're thinking about these primitive mortals and adjusters aren't a given, you know, you could think about maybe the mom has an adjuster and the dad doesn't. Well, the kids benefit then from mom having an adjuster, and they get adjusters. And, you know, remember, biologic mom and dad, not, you know, adopted or anything. You know, and so, you know, it would come into play. But you can see here, you know, it's a pretty interesting statement how marginally human they are,
yeah,
if they don't even have group guardianship until they get an adjuster. So very lowly fact, these primitive men. Okay.
Chris?
Yep.
You said there was an exception to where you could have a no adjuster and no soul and still survive.
Yeah, that's what I was just talking about with a kid. I mean,
oh, you still survive. Oh, you have to be a kid.
Right. I mean, if you're younger than 16, well, okay, you know, I mean, you know, technically, if you're younger than six, and die, but one of your parents survive,
okay,
you know, then you get resurrected, and because literally, you know, you're treated as still connected to the parent.
So one of these spirit fusers who fuse upon resurrection is then iniquity out of play,
yeah,
for them?
Yeah. Iniquity's out of play, step one.
So we don't really need to.
Not us lucky ones, though, that don't fuse right away. Iniquity's still in play for us.
The potential
there. All right. Yeah, so you just think about how it's kind of like, you know, you go all the way to the other end with, like the author of this paper, A Mighty Messenger. They got put in, you know, that the individual who wrote this paper got inducted into the core of the finality, but immediately snatched out by the Paradise Trinity. And everything effectively that this one-time mortal would have done from that point till the completion of the grand universe, settled in light and life, was just given to them by grace. You know, they were completed by fiat, by the Paradise Trinity. So that whole completion phase, after the perfection phase, is just done for them.
He's a seven-stager.
Well, he's not a seven-stage spirit. He's still a six-stage spirit, but he's, remember, we have to become seven-stage all at the same time. So, but all of that, that completing of the process is just given to them by grace. See, so you can see a measure of that here. See, all of the normal development is just given to them by grace, yeah, so there's various, you know, shades of that, all high and low. All right, so that's what's going on here. So you've got these spirit fusers on every world for a time. And obviously, like they said, this has nothing to do with the ones where it's just everyone is a spirit fuser. You don't have any transitional phase like this. All right.
An experiential adjuster remains with a primitive human being throughout his entire lifetime in the flesh. The adjusters contribute much to the advancement of primitive men, but are unable to form eternal unions with such mortals. This transient ministry of the adjusters accomplishes two things. First, they gain valuable and actual experience in the nature and working of the evolutionary intellect, an experience which will be invaluable in connection with later contacts on other worlds with beings of higher development. Second, the transient sojourn of the adjusters contributes much towards preparing their mortal subjects for possible subsequent spirit fusion. All God-seeking souls of this type achieve eternal life through the spiritual embrace of the Mother Spirit of the local universe, thus becoming ascendant mortals of the local universe regime.
Ascending mortals.
Become ascending mortals, yes. Many persons from pre-Adamic Urantia were thus advanced to the mansion worlds of Satania.
The reason they're stressing pre-Adamic, even though there's going to be some, it's not going to be so many, because remember they tell you the Adamic blood, even though it was spread thin, did pretty much get everywhere to some degree, some tiny little degree. So that did, improve this situation. But, the things to notice in there is, again, see how they say it, where was that? They are unable to form eternal unions with such mortals. It's not that they don't get a chance to, it's just literally not possible, period. Okay, and the when they say possible subsequent spirit fusion, did you notice that? Did that possible word throw you off? Okay. You're going, well, is God just like, dropping the ball on some of them, or why is it possible? Remember, iniquity is in play. It's not a given. They could choose iniquity during that life and unravel that soul, that embryonic soul. So it's not a given. But that's why they technically have to put the word possible in there. Now, just the one other thing, that experience that the adjuster gets, when you've got these non-fusers like this, remember they tell you, a lot of times they'll send a virgin adjuster, to inhabit one of those individuals. Because they don't need, any great experiential abilities to do that little, basic job of pretty much just making an embryonic soul and waiting, a handful of years and, till the saber-toothed tiger eats the person that they're with or whatever, some brief life comes to a tragic end, right? So if it was a virgin adjuster that was in one of these primitive men, afterwards, what kind of an adjuster is it called?
An advanced
adjuster, right? Any adjuster, once they've had, just even one, no matter how short, of an experience with either one of these primitive men or the series two that we're about to read about, then from that point on, they're an advanced adjuster. They've advanced from the initial very rudimentary experiential training they got in the simulators on Divinington. They have some real world training and real world experience. And then if that adjuster, that advanced adjuster is in a mortal that chooses iniquity, after that, they're called a supreme adjuster. Right. Okay, so just want to remind you of the technical. So that's what we're talking about, that first one, about it getting experience, about it becoming an advanced adjuster. Or if it already was an advanced, a little bit more advanced, but still just an advanced adjuster. All right.
The gods who ordained that mortal man should climb to higher levels of spiritual intelligence through long ages of evolutionary trials and tribulations take note of his status and needs at every stage of the ascent, and always are they divinely fair and just, even charmingly merciful, in the final judgments of the struggling mortals of the early days of the evolving races.
Okay. Trust. Right, definitely trust. Nothing of survival value is ever lost. And the even charmingly merciful,
yeah.
Does anyone have any idea why they put that in there? Is there something you can think of that would motivate that wording?
Make us feel a little better reading.
Remember, if you read through the prerequisites of a jester indwelling, which is in what, paper 118, right? I mean, 108, added a 10 to it. 108, the second adjuster paper. That last category of how someone who doesn't get an adjuster automatically might get an adjuster, there's something that none of the revelators even understand. And every once in a while, there's a mysterious engagement by, you notice they said the gods there? They said plural, God the Supreme. Sometimes God Supreme gets involved, and there can be an adjuster that'll come to a mortal where everyone's going, really? That mortal just got an adjuster? Why on earth would that adjuster, or that mortal get an adjuster? You know, that's a charmingly merciful act. You know, some really, really limited human gets an adjuster because God the Supreme who sees the whole, it's like, it's not as limited as you think, right? But there are going to be those that even in that sense don't get an adjuster, see? So, see, appreciate that even the revelators are surprised at what God can see in us, okay? That there's survival value there that even all of these celestial beings can't see. And that being gets an adjuster, and they get an embryonic soul, and they survive as a spirit fuser. So if someone doesn't get an adjuster, okay, that means that there isn't anything there. And you can't go, well, how could God be so cruel as to let that human die? It's like, well, because there just was, it was just part of the whole. It wasn't part of bringing in a definitive individual into existence in eternity. It was part of the evolution of the Supreme. Nothing of individual survival value is lost.
And yeah, it's kind of like when I was turning vegetarian, and I kept thinking of animals like Disneyland does.
Yes, right.
Until I got a cattle ranch and I realized how dumb cattle are. I said, okay, so it didn't feel quite so bad. There's a reason for them being here.
Pretty limited.
But it's hard to understand that actually, I guess, very primitive man can be very dumb animal type.
Right, so think of that. I mean, they literally aren't an animal. They literally have the seventh adjutant. They're encircled in the Holy Spirit. They have a personality. But what you're seeing is a brief kind of coagulation of the Supreme. You know, where does that personality go when it doesn't go on with that individual? It's part of God the Almighty. Right? Once you know where it goes with the revelation, it's like, oh, so I wasn't actually seeing an individual getting going there. I was seeing God the Almighty needing to do kind of a focused thing for a little bit of time. You were seeing God the Almighty needing to kind of inject himself into time and space in a very definitive way for a short period of time and then backing out. God the Supreme, as God the Almighty, did something there. You know, it's kind of like a personalized adjuster intervening. Only God the Supreme does it through a mortal like that that doesn't go on as an individual. See, so it's that person didn't die. It's actually the Supreme doing some mysterious thing. That's part of the purposing of God the Supreme, that personality. It just appeared to be identified merely with an individual, a lowly mortal individual. It's still identified with an individual. It's just a much bigger. It's individuality of the whole, that's identified with. See, so that's what's going on there. Something very different than we ever imagined could be happening. Right? You know, and with animals, you know, it's not at that full personal focusing. That's just, you know, a temporary focusing of the Creative Mother Spirit. You know, she's doing things via those animals. That's her doing that stuff. She's up to manipulating the details of the whole, one animal at a time. Every insect is her doing something. Right? All right, let's get to series two.
Series two, mortals of the non-adjuster fusion types. These are specialized types of human beings who are not able to effect eternal union with their indwelling adjusters. Type classification among the 1, 2, and 3 brained races is not a factor in adjuster fusion. All such mortals are akin, but these non-adjuster fusion types are a wholly different and markedly modified order of willed creatures. Many of the non-breathers belong to this series, and there are numerous other groups who do not ordinarily fuse with adjusters.
Okay. I just remembered one thing I wanted to mention in passing, too. It's just this is in play here. You notice what they said there. The gods who ordained long ages of evolutionary trials and tribulations. Ooh, kind of prickly. see, so trials and tribulations are not the doings of the devil. No, the gods have ordained your trials and tribulations. So. Okay, so you notice that the first thing they wanted to do is if you know about that paper that we haven't gotten to yet, where they talk about 1 brain, 2 brain, and 3 brain, okay, that you say that doesn't have anything to do with this. Okay, that has nothing to do with whether or not they're a spirit fuser or a father fuser. That's completely irrelevant. But it also means on the flip side, you could have 1, 2, and 3 brained, like non-breathers. Like, wow, okay, that's really getting complicated. okay, and then the other little thing, if you're familiar with the non-breather section, which is also up in that paper with the 1, 2, and 3 brainers, there it seems to just be that all non-breathers are spirit fusers. When you read that sentence, here they're being more precise. Many of the non-breathers belong to this series, so not all. Okay, so. That's just reminding you of how many shades of gray there is. Okay, so apparently you actually have some worlds where you have non-breathers that are father fusers. So they must be, on the boundary line, You go a little bit more deeply into the non-breather and they can't fuse with father fragments. But there's some that can. So that's an interesting little tidbit that you can only get right here. Not to mention, there are numerous other groups, not ordinary fuse with adjusters. Remember, you've got local universes where a significant fraction of the worlds in the local universe are not father fusers, and it probably involves all kinds of unrevealed orders of mortals. Remember, there's just all kinds of stuff they haven't revealed. Remember, they talked about how there's 3 different types of worlds when we were reading paper 36. And we were trying to figure out what in the world that meant. And right, see, it's related to all these mysterious things like this. So you apparently have all kinds of non-breathers and other non-father fusers. All right, what else do they say?
Like series number one, each member of this group enjoys the ministry of a single adjuster during lifetime in the flesh. During temporal life, these adjusters do everything for their subjects of temporary indwelling that is done on other worlds where the mortals are of fusion potential. The mortals of this second series are often indwelt by virgin adjusters, but the higher human types are often in liaison with masterful and experienced monitors.
Okay, so, obviously it's much more likely that the series one, will have virgins, but this it says virgin adjusters too. But you could have, like I said, what if it's a world that's deeply settled in light and life? Okay, you're going to have all kinds of very, very masterful adjusters, involved. Kinds of supreme adjusters and whatnot. So Just because you have a supreme adjuster doesn't mean you're going to fuse with it if you're not a father fuser. And remember how earlier in this paper we saw Master Li being used? And here you see Master Full. I talked about it there. You know, when they say Master Full instead of Master Li, that has an edge. That means you're talking a little bit more about dominance, you know, imperious, you know, master slave. The F-U-L instead of the L-Y has that edge. Why would they use Master Full here? Thought changers, thought adjusters, thought controllers. Master Full. Controllers. Dominance. See? That's why they use Master Full instead of Masterly there. All right. But see, a lot of the stuff we were talking about with Series 1 is in play. All right.
In the ascendant plan for upstepping the animal origin creatures, these beings enjoy the same devoted service of the sons of God as is extended to the Urantian type of mortals. Seraphic cooperation with adjusters on the non-fusion planets is just as fully provided as on the worlds of fusion potential. The guardians of destiny minister on such spheres just as on Urantia, and similarly function at the time of mortal survival, at which time the surviving soul becomes spirit-fused.
See, there it is right there. See, at which time the surviving soul becomes spirit-fused, right, at resurrection. Okay, so now notice the difference, though, about this seraphic ministry here. So it's not like with the primitive mortals. Here, you know, you've got, it's just like with us. And so you have ministry to children and, you know, and everything, you know, it's done, you know, because they are, you know, they aren't primitive, they're just different. Okay? There's a zinger in there, though. Okay? If you were thinking deductively, when they say these beings enjoy the same devoted service of the sons of God, as is extended to the Urantia type of mortals. Okay, that's all fine and dandy. You talk about planetary princes, magisterial sons, bestowal sons, trinity teacher sons. What about the one I skipped there? What about the Adam and Eve? All right. See, this is one of the most challenging things to think about with material sons and daughters going to a world. Let's take the one type of series two that we know about, non-breathers. Okay, so you've got a non-breather world, and you send an Adam and Eve to it. Okay, step one, remember when we talk about the Adam and Eve, there's two downstepping processes that are in play to make this happen. First of all, you dematerialize the material son and daughter, rematerialize them as an Adam and Eve, and you downstep them when you rematerialize them. The life carriers rematerialize them in a slightly downstepped way. Well, it's not going to be as slightly as you initially imagine when you're dealing with a non-breather world. Okay, they have to rematerialize them as non-breathers.
Of course.
Because there's no air on that world. Now, the air they've been breathing on Gerasim, say, if they're in our look, there's no air on that world. So that would be an example of an Adam and Eve on a non-breather world. They're destined for father fusion. There's non-breathers that fuse with their, with the father fragment. Yeah. Right? Maybe. But see, that shows you that you could have a non-breather world that would fuse with father fragments. Okay? Now, you know, the biggie, though, remember the Adam and Eve don't mate, in general. So that second downstepping, which is the really important one to really match up, you know, with the height or whatever differences. So the offspring, you know, that Adam and Eve produce, you know, have to be able to mate with non-breathers. So they're going to be, you know, very different than the kind of children that those material sons and daughters have on Gerasim. You know, which we know what they look like, you know, they're going to look like what we picture as a perfect, you know, andite, you know, Adamite sort of, you know, being to look like. So, you know, that's a, and appreciate that you, you know, so you're going to handle all of these oddball worlds, like non-breather worlds and stuff, with the same set of, you know, there's just one initial material son and daughter in each local system, and they're biologically compatible with every planet, including non-breather worlds. You know, so when we say biologically compatible, don't forget there is this downstepping thing, okay, to make them actually, you know, they can physically engage, but you're essentially giving that genetics to those non-breathers. And it reminds you, like we've been talking about, how genetics is a more transcendent thing than we currently imagine it is. It's a more malleable phenomenon. Like a Melchizedek can make themselves material, which means now they have DNA and, you know, and veins and, you know, and whatnot. They might, you know, be a Melchizedek life carrier and produce Midsoniters. Yeah, they've got all the equipment. They mate with a material daughter. Right. So, I mean, when we were talking, you know, this is another reminder of this, to think about genetics in a more transcendent way. That there's a way in which beings that we think of as spiritual have DNA like we do. Our DNA is a down-step expression of some higher fact. Just because it's made literally material atoms and molecules doesn't mean it's divorced from what's on high.
So even the planets were, you know, when Adam and Eve come, they still may be living in the water, they still may be living in the air, they may not totally evolve to be only on land. That'd be a different side.
As I recall, I believe that by the time they're will creatures, are on land, even if they went through the water or the air.
Will, or I thought maybe later on, whatever.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, all, you know, not to mention all of the really bizarre things that they didn't even tell us about, you know, different variations. Yeah, all of those are... You can make an Adam and Eve, any Adam and Eve on Gerizim can match up with any of those variations with just a little tweaking. You know, so that reminds you about the variability. We talked about this, the variability that we have because of our design and because of life animation. That variability is amazingly, you know, broad. And these Adam and Eves doing this are, you know, they all that variability is put into play, is their downstep. They have to be everything from this end of the spectrum to that end of the spectrum. Without, you know, they aren't changed into a different being. It's the same being. It's just, so just like one type of genetics on this planet can have, one genotype can have all kinds of different phenotypes. That's what you're talking about here. And Adam and Eve have one genotype, but they can have all these different phenotypes. One of their phenotypes can be non-breathers. You know, one of the different ways that same genetics can be expressed. So that should really, if anyone's familiar with biology or loves biology, that should really get your gears turning about that whole bit of genotype, phenotype, and stuff like that. All right, let's get some more here.
When you encounter these modified mortal types on the mansion worlds, you will find no difficulty in communicating with them. There, they speak the same system language, but by a modified technique. These beings are identical with your order of creature life and spirit and personality manifestations, differing only in certain physical features and in the fact that they are non-fusible with thought adjusters.
Okay, just briefly, I alluded to this a while back. I told you we'd get to this point where they are going to talk about or allude to mindal communication. Okay, remember that when we're on the mansion worlds, none of us are jiggling air molecules to talk to each other. We're communicating with each other mindally. And, you know, you take non-breathers, okay, that's the way they've always been communicating. So they wake up in the mansion worlds, they're communicating just like they've always been communicating, mind to mind. There's no air molecules to jiggle on an airless world. Okay.
And so, hand signals. So quick, before you go on, yep. That quick question right there.
Yep.
Does that does necessarily mean somebody's reading your mind. They're only hearing what you're,
right,
how you're communicating.
Right, they're not reading it. I mean, that's one of the, remember, that one of the first things you learn in the mansion worlds is how not, is now how not to mindily rape people, you know, insert yourself where you shouldn't be. Right, you have to learn all the etiquette of this, you know, how to stay within your boundaries. And, right, but not to mention even more definitive liaisons than merely, yeah, reading someone's mind. But, so what's going on here? See, we're both resurrected, spirit fusers and father fusers, and we're communicating mindily, but you see, they, and we can understand each other, but they're going to be using a modified technique. You know, both of us are on the first mansion worlds, and so none of us can consciousize the local universe tongue yet. We have to use the crutch tongue of Satania, the system language here. What?
The harp?
No, no. No, that has to do with connecting to the circuits, not to communicating with each other. Okay. You're speaking the system language, but see, they have to do it by a modified technique relative to us. Now, they probably think of it, you know, they're doing it by the normal technique. We're doing it by the modified technique. You see, because remember that you're resurrected a lot like you were. So we're resurrected a lot like we are now, where we communicate by jiggling air molecules, but we can't do that there. They're resurrected just like they, you know, were before, talking mindily. See, so we're going to have to figure out how to take a mind that used to be able to make tongue and mouth move when it wanted to communicate, doesn't have that anymore, and you've got to figure out how to do it the other way. You know, whereas they are going to kind of just do it
the
way they.
Error on that, on the,
there's error, but that's not how you communicate.
See? In the very beginning.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Would you be thinking in English in the very, very, very beginning?
No. When you first woke up, yeah, you don't know the system language, and so you're going to be thinking in English, and yeah, and you're going to need a translator until you learn the system language. Yeah. 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 No. All right. Let's get some more here.
As to why this type of creature is never able to fuse with the adjusters of the Universal Father, I am unable to say. Some of us incline to the belief that the life carriers, in their efforts to formulate these beings capable of maintaining existence in an unusual planetary environment, are confronted with the necessity of making such radical modifications in the universe plan of intelligent will creatures that it becomes inherently impossible to bring about permanent union with the adjusters. Often have we asked, is this an intended or an unintended part of the ascension plan? But we have not found the answer.
Well, that's an amazing statement. We're talking about a mighty messenger. Gone through the whole Ascendington thing, paradise. And those who know are not talking still. And those that you might think, well, don't the life carriers? No, the life carriers don't even understand this stuff. They just make the creatures trust that if they're following what their superiors told them to do, that everything will work out the way it's supposed to.
I was only following orders.
Yeah, that's an amazing statement. So
yeah, they've been through all the billion worlds too.
Don't expect to have your why question answered anytime soon. See?
Are we gonna finish this tonight?
Yeah, because there's now that we're ready to talk about us, it's just boilerplate.
Okay.
They're gonna tease us some more. So yeah, let's keep going because it's pretty straightforward here.
We just need to trust that they're always divinely fair and just.
Yes, we just need to trust.
The unnumbered series.
Oh no, series three first.
Series three. Mortals of adjuster fusion potential. All father fused mortals are of animal origin, just like the Urantia races. They embrace mortals of the one-brained, two-brained, and three-brained types of adjuster fusion potential. Urantians are of the intermediate or two-brained type, being in many ways humanly superior to the one-brained groups, but definitely limited in comparison with the three-brained orders.
Who actually have a better understanding of what the word spirit means.
These three types of physical brain endowment are not factors in adjust or bestowal, in seraphic service, or in any other phase of spirit ministry. The intellectual and spiritual differential between the three brain types characterize individuals who are otherwise quite alike in mind endowment and spiritual potential, being greatest in the temporal life and tending to diminish as the mansion worlds are traversed one by one. From the system headquarters on, the progression of these three types is the same, and their eventual paradise destiny is identical.
Because when you become a Gerasim citizen, now you're a Marantia individual in a definitive way. You've left all the mortal animal origin differences behind. You finally have individuated in Marantia. And that's why. All right. And then everything else.
The unnumbered series. These narratives cannot possibly embrace all of the fascinating variations in the evolutionary worlds. You know that every tenth world is a decimal or experimental planet, but you know nothing of the other variables that punctuate the processional of the evolving spheres.
Evolutionary
spheres.
Evolutionary spheres. There are differences too numerous to narrate, even between the revealed orders of living creatures, as between planets of the same group. But this presentation makes clear the essential differences in relation to the ascension career. And the ascension career is the most important factor in any consideration of the mortals of time and space.
Just one little thing. There's always little things that, okay, remember how you can speculate that planets are, brought online in groups. See, they're saying, when you read other spots in the book, well, here it's just basically saying it. See, as between planets of the same group. Yeah. So, it appears that in Satania, they're done in about 200 at a time. So you have a 200 that, are basically evolving together, all go through the mansion worlds together and whatnot, and then they all move on to light and life and whatnot. And then, several hundreds of millions of years later, you have another 200, roughly, that are going to be inhabited worlds. Remember, they tell you that, we've got about a little over 200 right now, and none of them are inhabited yet, but they're all, working towards life implantation, and stuff like this, right? See, so it's hundreds of millions of years down the road. See, so all of us in this block of 200, we'll be way into light and life and not using the mansion worlds by the time they come online. Yeah, so it's done in very manageable sets so that you don't swamp the mansion worlds with too many ascenders.
Bite size.
Yep, done in bite-sized chunks. Yeah.
As to the chances of mortal survival, let it be made forever clear. All souls of every possible phase of mortal existence will survive provided they manifest willingness to cooperate with their indwelling adjusters and exhibit a desire to find God and to attain divine perfection. Even though these desires be but the first faint flickers of the primitive comprehension of that true light which lights every man who comes into the world.
First chapter of John, Gospel of John. Just one little thing there. Again, notice, don't misinterpret that. Don't try to understand that paragraph just on your initial world. That's to be understood all souls, not all adjutant mindful selves that are mortal and die and aren't resurrected. No, souls. All souls of every possible phase. Not just the first phase on your initial world, every possible phase of mortal existence. Like, well, doesn't mortal mean here? No. Mortal means everywhere from when you're conceived until you fuse with your thought adjuster. You're immortal and you're technically immortal until you fuse with your thought adjuster. And if you don't remember them speaking directly to that, on page 539, in the Seven Mansion Rules paper, which is paper 47, very last paragraph of section 9 in there. I'll just read it to you to remind you of that little fact. You will greatly enjoy your progress through the seven dematerializing worlds. They are really demortalizing spheres. You are mostly human on the first mansion world, just a mortal being minus a material body, a human mind housed in a Marantia form, a material body of the Marantia world, but not a mortal house of flesh and blood. You really pass from the mortal state to the immortal status at the time of adjuster fusion. And by the time you have finished the Gerasim career, you will be full-fledged Marantians. Just like we, I was just saying about, why it was that, from the system headquarters world on. See, you're
full. I like this willingness to cooperate.
Right. And just appreciate, to properly understand the significance of that, you need to get up where there's more will possible. I mean, if you get all messed up if you try to put those profound statements into this initial ignorant life. Right now, the thing that's important is the soul. That's what needs to decide to eventually fuse with the adjuster, not your adjutant self. And you have no consciousness of that soul that has a consciousness of the adjuster. But there, there'll just be two selves, your Marantia self and the adjuster. You'll be eye to eye. This bit about cooperating with the indwelling adjuster, you can do it at eye level there. I mean, in general, the only time that this can really happen is once you're off your initial world. So don't damn humans in this life because they haven't done all these profound things. I mean, most of us who think we've done these profound things are actually delusional. So it's just, there's not much happening here. Just don't, remember how they say, don't try to cram everything into this one short life? Like, don't try to cram the understanding of this paragraph into this one short life. Okay? They did it again. All souls, not all adjutant minds, all souls of every possible faith. All right. So next time, we'll finally get to some meat about us. No, I actually said last week they'd tease us a little bit, but mostly they talk about other mortals. Yes. Okay. Let's take a moment here and reflect on humility, I think.